Welcome to the Business of Behavior podcast, hosted by Dr. Becca Tagg. We support clinicians who have been bitten by the entrepreneurial bug, looking to strengthen their practice to better serve their clients, employees, and themselves.
Hello, and welcome to this session of the Business of Behavior podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Becca Tagg, and this is session 27. Today, we're going to talk about consultation and collaboration within schools or educational settings. And I'm going to talk about a few quick tips to help those collaborations be as successful as possible. I think I've shared before that before I got into clinical psychology and behavior analysis, I started my training as a school psychologist. When I was going through my school psych training, it's also when I completed the coursework to become a BCBA. I accrued some of those hours towards my BCBA in a non-public school for kids with autism and related disabilities, but I also accrued some of those hours while I was doing the required 1,500-hour school psychology internship, and that was in a public school setting in North Carolina. Since then, I've continued to spend a good chunk of time consulting with school districts and other educational settings using a combination of my school psychology training and also my behavior analytic training. When I was finishing up my undergrad at University of North Carolina, Wilmington, go Seahawks, I was struggling to decide what I wanted to do, whether it was going to be school or clinical psych for graduate school. And ultimately, I decided on school psychology because of job security, right? I mean, school psychologists are written into the law. There must be a school psychologist in systems that are part of the eligibility determination process. So I thought that would be a safe bet. And also because kids spend 35-ish hours per week at school. And so that would be a great place to have a big impact on kids that may need additional support, particularly those non-traditional learners. And as I've shared before, I dropped out of high school, partially because I was also a non-traditional learner. I had some other things sort of happening that trumped learning reading comprehension and algebra. And so I thought that I'd be able to make a difference there. Plus, the idea of having summer break and Christmas break and spring break forever is definitely appealing. My observations working in schools has been that many of the missteps occur around the same thing with consultants, and that's really not having a good, clear understanding of the culture, the priorities, and the laws that surround the educational system. It's an interesting concept because as behavior analysts, we recognize that behavior is an interaction between the individual and the environment, and yet this is a definite area where many of us struggle when working in schools. The first thing to note is that there's different levels of environments. We have the immediate environment that the learner is in, but we also have the environment that the adult is in. And then even the greater, wider environment of the classroom or the school or even the school district. And this kind of reminds me of Yuri Bronfenbrenner's ecological systems. And I think to be really thorough in our evaluation of behavior in context, we have to think about all of these different environments as potential contributors to the behaviors that we see and therefore have to take them into account when coming up with an intervention plan. I think this becomes particularly important when we're not embedded in that system, such as when we are an outside consultant coming into the school system. But even if we're a consultant where we serve multiple different schools, right, because we're not embedded in any of those schools. So the concept of being a consultant, I think, is both a blessing and a curse because we're outside enough from the environment to be able to see it in a more objective manner. But the flip side is that we're often seen as a them, doing air quotes around them, instead of an us as perceived by the school district personnel. And so one example of the first things we need to do is to get an understanding of the contingencies or those unwritten social rules for the classroom or the school or even the district we're in. And I'll draw a parallel process here to when we first start an in-home program. We have to figure out what is most socially important to that family. How does that family interact with each other? And how do they operate within a cultural context? And all of this information helps us come up with the most appropriate plan. Remember, it doesn't matter how great of an intervention plan we come up with if it doesn't fit in the context for that family or that school or that classroom. If it's not a good fit in the existing context, it's not going to be implemented with fidelity or even at all, and then nobody benefits. One of the ways that I do this is I just shut up. Instead of coming in and wanting to drop all these knowledge bombs, I just come in and close my mouth. I listen. I gather data. I use those active listening skills I've learned as a psychologist to get a true understanding of each person's experience and perception of that behavior and what's going on and what's most important. And then with my mouth shut, I also open my eyes. I observe. And I'm not talking about just observing the behavior that I'm called in to help with. I mean, that's the easy part. Usually it's a specific student or a specific student with a specific behavior. And that's what we're taught in school as behavior analysts in training. And it's what we're really good at. I'm talking about observing the greater system, like in Bronfenbrenner's model, observing how the class operates. How do other classes operate? I observe how the teachers interact with each other and how the students interact with each other. And how do all of these people interact with administration and parents and within the larger community? All of this is gathering data about the context of the environment within which I've been invited to participate. And as a behavior analyst, we are looking at behavior and how, and behavior is how an individual interacts with his or her environment. Sometimes I think we don't go quite wide enough in our scope or our definition of that environment, and that's where we may make some missteps. We really need to do a thorough ecological assessment, particularly when coming into a new system that's as large as a school system. Another piece that I think is important to remember when consulting or working in an educational setting is that the priorities of educational systems are different than those when we're working in a clinic or a home setting. When we accept insurance funding, we're working on medically necessary behaviors, but the school setting is not the same. Schools are focused on academic behaviors and educational performance. This isn't because they're being difficult any more than insurance companies are setting out to just be difficult. It's because the contingencies around how resources are allocated and spent are very specific. There may be differences in the way each setting interprets these guidelines. So we can see this to be true even looking in the insurance world. So if I'm looking at what Blue Cross Blue Shield covers or the way they interpret our CPT codes versus the way TRICARE does, there are significant differences there, and both are considered medical insurances. So there's going to be differences between schools as well. So sometimes we may come into an educational setting and still be operating from that medical model or that perspective of medical funding instead of educational funding. And we might make a recommendation and then it's not accepted. But remember the context of the educational setting. If it's not getting in the way of the child's ability to access instruction or their performance in the school setting, it's not going to be a priority to the school. And that's okay. It doesn't mean the school is good or bad or wrong or right. It just means that each setting has different priorities, really based on their purpose. And to effectively consult within each setting, we have to keep their priorities in the forefront of their mind. It doesn't mean that if the child isn't getting something at school that they can't get it somewhere else. Sometimes as a consultant, our job may also be to sort of code switch, right? Or to speak the different language to the different settings. So maybe that's referring families to where they can go for additional support that may not be appropriate for the educational setting and yet may also be beneficial to the child. Related to this, sometimes we may come in and make a plan that would work well in a one-on-one setting, and very few school districts have the luxury of having enough one-on-one support staff for all kids that would benefit from it. Remember now, I'm not saying that if a child needs a one-on-one, that it shouldn't be recommended and evaluated to potentially be done within the school district, but it does mean that not every child has or truly needs a one-on-one in the school setting to access that instruction. So our intervention plans have to take the school resources into account. Remember, it doesn't matter how great our plan is if it doesn't fit into the context of the setting where it will be implemented and the available resources in that setting. It's not going to be successful. My last suggestion regarding successful school consultation is that we're often there for a specific case or a specific reason, and then we're supposed to wean ourselves out. And so I liken that to when I start a home program. During intake, I'm talking about discharge from that very first day. I also want to be talking with the school district about what this is going to look like when I leave. Having that clear communication about how long the consultative relationship will last, what my responsibilities are, and what the responsibilities are of other school team members can really help things go more smoothly for everyone to feel more effective. As a consultant, our job is to work ourselves out of a job, just like it is in any other setting. The goal is not for us to be staying on one case forever. The goal is for us to transfer our skills to the teachers or assistants or janitors or administrators or whoever is part of that school team that's going to be implementing the plan so they don't need us anymore. We know there are not enough of us to go around for kids, families, schools, in any setting. And this is true even when we're embedded in the school system. I've had consultative contracts that last for years with school districts, and very rarely have I ever been on the same case for that entire contract. I want those teachers and assistants to feel successful interacting with that child without me being there. Perhaps in the beginning, I'm there more frequently, collecting data, trying out different interventions, and then using that I do, we do, then you do format of training, which is much like behavioral skills training, and then I start to fade out. Schools can be a great place for behavior analysts to really hone our consultative skills, but it also can be a place where some behavior analysts get stuck due to not truly understanding the different contingencies at play. Through better understanding those contingencies and the different contexts interwoven into these educational settings, we are better able to be a more effective consultant. Then we've better paired ourselves with success, which then leads to the increased likelihood that the school system will reach out to us again. Stronger and more successful consultation within these other settings helps bridge the gap between educational and clinical practice, which really helps us bring behavior analysis to a wider audience. And if that's not dissemination, I don't know what is. So thanks for taking the time to spend it with me here on the Business of Behavior podcast. Time is our most precious resource, as it's so limited, and I'm humbled every time I see the number of downloads go up or another person subscribe to the podcast or leave a review. As always, I'm open to feedback and suggestions. You can reach me via email or through the Contact Me page on thebusinessofbehavior.com or join the ABA Business Builders Facebook group to join in for more great discussions. Again, this is Dr. Becca Tagg with the Business of Behavior podcast, and I hope you guys have a great rest of your day.